I feel like I age kind of asynchronously. So I feel like I've lived my 50s when I was 20.
So instead of Benjamin Button, are you Benjamin Banger? Hey, streamers and dreamers, it's Otto Kent. Welcome to another episode of our Electronic Beats Conversation Series. This is where you find in-depth interviews with some of our favorite people in music, culture, and design right now. Today, I have a very special guest in the studio with me, Narciss, a DJ and producer from Berlin whose mission is to make techno fun and colorful again, which I love. With almost 15 years of DJing under their belt, they can already cross so many things from their bucket lists. Narciss has been heating up crowds with their melodic trance and Eurodance vibes all around the world. After playing an iconic Boiler Room set, they've been touring in Japan, Australia, North and South America. Narciss is the opposite of what their name might suggest, more like a nerdy video game fan with 90s kids leanings who's grounded and humble and amazingly charming, as you might hear in our conversation to come. I talked to Narciss about growing up in the 90s in Berlin, Eurotrance and kitsch, techno TikTok, and of course, lots of Y2K nostalgia. Narciss, thank you for being in the studio with us today.
Hello, nice to be here.
Is it awkward to hear about yourself in the future?
No, I think it's cool, actually, to be honest. I always really enjoy it. I don't do podcasts that much, but whenever somebody does these intros about me, I'm always like, ooh, cool.
Did you listen to a lot of radio growing up?
Yeah, actually, there was, or my dad did, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
My dad used to listen to quite a bit of radio. So, but in general, like, it was always like these like recorded radio shows from America, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Fun fact. So like Bob Dylan used to have a radio show.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And he used to like get these from the internet, and they would be running in the apartment.
Wow,
quite a lot.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah, I have a soft spot in my heart for like radio and everything all around that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you can tell that you have a soft spot for some of those more pop culture leanings, just because of. I mean, I love and I lean into that as well. I used to love listening to radio. There were some radio stations where I would just turn on my boombox really, really soft and stay up late. They would like be radio stations that would broadcast concerts sometimes. So you could
that's dope.
And there was one time my sister was at the concert and I had to be in bed. And so I was having this experience of listening to maybe her in the background at this rock concert.
That's so wild.
And Berlin has a really interesting relationship to radio as well. It
Germany,
played a lot into the East and West situation.
Oh, in that way. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, like still Germany in general is like quite the radio. Has quite a like pie culture of radio, I would say, actually, like still does in a way. I mean, I'm always surprised when I see like statistics about how many people still like actively listen to the radio.
Yeah. And we have to pay for it.
Yeah, we sure do.
It's one of the more annoying parts of taxation in Germany is like forgetting that you left an apartment and are still like paying the radio and TV tax on it.
Nowadays, I'm even like a little bit more okay with it than in like a couple of years ago, because nowadays that at least leads to you having like these mediatheques, you know what I mean? So like with every like TV and radio station, you can just go online and watch or listen to everything that has been broadcast over the last, I don't know, like fucking 30 years or something.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
But like, I remember when I first moved out and like me being 18, 19, media taking weren't a thing quite yet.
Okay.
And still paying that shit and me being just, I can't even watch TV on my TV because I don't have it like hooked up. And
yeah.
Still paying
I mean, isn't that a majority of us? I mean, from an outsider's perspective coming in, like I was like, okay, I can really appreciate this because there's no funding coming from the government in the US, and there's all these other places that I've been where, you know, you have to apply for grant funding to get these projects off the ground. Mm-hmm. And then radio for me, especially college radio or independent radio, it was such an experimental space for me to learn how to be not just in front of an audience, but to put together music in a more quieter way.
Yeah.
You know, because like when you're in the club and you're clanging stuff together,
it's
like
bangers only.
Or even when you're doing an opening set, like no one's there, but with a very chill radio show, there might be like 100 people listening.
100%. I get it. It's also like, I think what you said about like college radios is so interesting because like, to my knowledge, I mean, all of this about like college radios and also this huge space in the like 90s roundabout in the UK with like pirate radios. There were like a little bit of like pirate radios here, but it's nothing compared to that scene that they had. You know what I mean? Like pirate radios at some point were bigger than like normal state-funded radio stations.
Absolutely.
And that is so cool to me. You know what I mean? Like these radios just like back then when everybody still hated the Prodigy and punk music, just like banging that shit out. That's so dope.
Oh, for sure.
Right.
Okay, so I've led you on a little path.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're talking about radio because I want to talk about popular electronic music.
Yeah.
And specifically the kind of music that in 1996, when you were 1 year old.
Hell yeah.
And a song like, for example, Gala, Freed from Desire, could be on television or on the radio.
It was.
Exactly.
Like... Yeah, absolutely. There's a funny little story from my mom because so this was not when I was 1 year old, but like minus 6 months, I guess. So like before I was born, but my mom and my dad actually went with when my mom was pregnant, went to the Love Parade with me still in her belly. And I guess like, yeah, I don't know. Something about the music from those years was really formative, even though I cannot have any memories of that.
I mean, it was one of the things I was most excited to talk to you about because you embody the fun side of that genesis of electronic music. And as someone who didn't grow up with Eurodance, Eurovision, European and Italian versions of house music, Italo, all of that stuff I discovered when I became really interested in collecting music and DJing versus it having like some lineage from a young age informing how nostalgia worked for the way I wanted to DJ.
Yeah.
Whereas when I think about you and the way in which you're remixing a lot of these nostalgic sounds and for a lot of super young people.
Yeah. It's weird, right? It's so interesting to me because it's like, I mean, it comes from this thing of like, again, I find myself in a lot of what you said because, I mean, to me as well, it's like I found out about most of this, like, again, same as you said, like Italo and like hard house music as well, and all of this like specific niches that throughout the 2000s were kind of lost to time in a little bit because enough people at some point decided, okay, no, this is in bad taste now.
Yeah, and it represented technology, like old technology at that point.
Yeah, exactly. And it was kind of like, no, this isn't cool anymore. So it was actually like kind of hard to come across it in a natural way, like at the club or something like that. You wouldn't hear these tracks a lot of the time.
Certainly not up until like 2014, 15. And that was just, and that was if you knew the right place at the right time.
I was going to say, and then it was still the standout.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. Like, you might be lucky enough to stumble upon something like this as like the, you might be lucky enough to stumble across a Tony DeVitt track as like the special high point of somebody's set.
Right.
But not as like a usual thing.
Right. Or what you and the network that you're creating with people who are almost making entire sets that like transport people into the future and the past of these sounds for over 1 to 3 hours.
And then it's like, it's so interesting. I mean, Tony DeVitt is such a...
Okay, explain that for listeners.
Yes. So Tony DeVitt was this absolute legendary producer from the UK who stood for... I mean, I dare to say that he was maybe even like the person who took hard house to its... Yeah, I would say best state that it's ever existed in. I think he was like very much a blueprint for like the perfection of a sound that a lot of producers nowadays are struggling to perfect in the same way as he did it back then. Because there was something about him that was so joyful.
Ooh.
And so, yeah, I think like so uncaring about things that were happening all around him. He just wanted to do his thing, you know what I mean? And it's like he's been one of my really like largest or like one of my biggest icons, I would say, all has almost always been, because he's just the, not just with the music that he made, but also like there's not that many interviews with him, unfortunately. But when you just see him talk and when you see the way he is, there's something so unbothered about him.
Okay. In a chill way, or
yeah, in a wonderful way.
Okay.
Like in such a
way. Do you
see
like, some of yourself?
100%. It's legitimately, when you see how he behaves in some interviews, I see it a little bit as almost like a blueprint, because
so
to
cool.
me this was like really like, oh, this is also a way to behave, while like the Detroit like techno crew were out being these really like artistically relevant cool kids.
Right. Sometimes stoic is, and sometimes mysterious.
Which is of course cool. Like I watched a Kevin Saunderson interview earlier, and that dude is just cool as hell, you know what I mean? But like, I love Tony DeVito's grinning freedom
right.
so much more. Of just like this, he's like this excitable kid almost, you know what I mean?
Kind of like a Todd Edwards vibe.
Yeah, true,
in a way.
Actually. That's a good comparison.
It's like a constantly yeah. like a kid, but
not,
then technical prowess.
Yeah, and like not fake as well. There's
right.
something about like, about it, you could see he was just enjoying what he was doing. And then also like writing and making some of the best electronic music that's ever existed. Like there's something about some of his tracks that are just unbelievably contagious. He mastered compression as well, which was crazy. He had a lot of compressors.
Nice.
But I think what he really mastered, and what his, I say, like the secret sauce to the tracks that are the most special of his catalog, I would say, was really, I think, something not technical at all. He mastered bringing across one emotion in his tracks, and that was euphoria.
Mm.
He was one of these people that like constantly in like the standout tracks of his, they are just so euphoric. Like they're really, it's hard to put into words, but they're incredibly catchy. I think he could have easily become like a pop songwriter with how catchy some of these tracks
nice.
Are. And yeah, like especially for back then, he mastered the art of the like arrangement of a song as well, because it's like the way he builds these moments that happen in these tracks, unbelievable. Especially during a time when techno, house, everything was still way more simple than mm-hmm. nowadays,
mm-hmm.
because it was just so difficult to mm-hmm. make something incredibly complex.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And his tracks, they sound like they were made yesterday, some of them, legitimately, with how up to date they are. They Yeah, it's. I really do think he was so far ahead of his time, like incredible.
Have you ever done an all Tony V like set?
Yeah, for sure. No, I don't think I recorded any, but like just at parties as well. And also like, I mean, it's like he sadly passed in I think like 2002 from HIV, which is very, very sad to this day.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's the thing. He was queer as well.
Oh,
actually,
wow.
Which I think goes a long way to knowing how to make a truly euphoric moment. You know
damn right.
what I mean?
Especially for the dance floor in the UK at that time. Do you know if he was a resident at any of the big clubs? Was he a resident at Heaven or something like that?
Trade, baby.
Oh my God. Gross.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, I left that little tidbit
for listeners who want to know more about trade. Good luck.
Yeah, yeah. Good luck diving into that rabbit hole of a
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, either turn on or turn off your parental settings.
Yeah, yeah. Did you know that it's still a thing, by the
yeah,
way?
Yeah, yeah, trade is still open.
I wasn't aware of this until like a little while ago.
Yeah, trade will never die.
Yeah,
I call it the cockroach.
That would have been, that is like my dream gig.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
100%.
Let's make some calls. Oh,
my gosh. I really want to fucking make
this
happen. Not
sure how the sound is there anymore, but...
I mean, it's pretty... I looked it up. It's very tech housey.
Fair enough.
But I'm okay with that. You know what
okay,
I mean? I just
want to... We have a real call to action for this long format interview.
Yeah.
Is whoever is listening to this, who has a connection at trade...
Please dig. I'll do a lot.
Okay, I'm going to like switch gears entirely, mostly because while we were talking about your love of one musician, I kind of got a sense of like, I think I know the answer to this question, but when you get a new video game...
Mm-hmm.
Do you read the instructions or do you immediately start playing?
Okay. I am so fucking sad that most games nowadays don't have instruction manuals anymore.
So now there's two questions, right? Because now you can go on YouTube and you can get instructions there, right?
Okay, fair enough.
Like, you can watch someone demo it or a little
bit. But it's not the same as like buying a game and then on the train home, leafing through the instruction manual. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Like this is like fucking almost like boomer talk at this point. You know what I mean? But like,
don't even.
Legitimately just this feeling, I remember it so well of like buying games and
yeah,
then
my
like,
hands are starting to sweat up a little bit right now.
Looking through the manual and about it. There's a game.
I figured you were a manual girly. So
there's an indie game that is even like centered around this feeling because like it's kind of, I unfortunately didn't like it that much.
Okay.
But it didn't really capture me, but it was like game of the year in a lot of ones that year. It's called Tunic.
Oh, okay.
And it's like very much like a Zelda-y game, I guess, aesthetically as well.
Okay.
But one central mechanic in this game is that you find pieces of the game manual that teach you how a lot of things in this game work.
I'm here for that.
Because it's like all of the dialogue in the game is in a language that you can't understand as well.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So it's like in this made up language. So you're really thrown into like the deep end and you don't know how anything works and anything functions. And then slowly but surely the game like teaches you about its mechanics. And I think that's so on point because like it shows how much fantasy it captured. You know, like looking through the manual almost captured your imagination more than playing the actual game sometimes. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. Because it would tell you about like what was possible.
Exactly.
And then you try it and you're like, I can't actually do this.
Or like it would tell you about these mechanics without you having played the game even yet, which is such an abstract concept at that point, you know? And you're like... Okay.
Then the names of the weapons or the potions and stuff.
Yeah. So it's like there was a magic to it, I think. I discovered this quite recently and it's such a wild concept. Are you familiar with the world of fake video games?
I know what you're talking about, which is the back rooms, right?
Not quite.
That's the only fake video game I know about.
That's cool, actually, because it became a video game after the movie, I guess, right? Or like the YouTube thing.
It was just a Reddit post with really good renderings, but they were just renderings. And then everyone made this lore around it like it was an actual game. So most of the internet thought it was an actual game.
That's actually a really good example. I meant something else, but that is super, super good example as well. What I mean is there is this book. I think it's two books now. I love them so much. I need to look up the names of them in a second. They are... instruction manuals for a video game that doesn't exist.
Oh my gosh.
And they are the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
That's so cool.
They're incredible. Somebody thought about like these mechanics, these creatures.
And they tell the story of the game through the manual.
It's a little less of a manual and more like a strategy guide, which is also another thing that exists. Okay. Remember that? Like these books that you could buy that told you how to beat a game.
Oh, yeah, that's so true.
And that's more what they are. So they're strategy guides for a game that doesn't exist. It's called Vermis.
Vermis.
V-E-R-M-I-S. I'll show you some pictures.
Oh, I would love to see pictures.
So you can kind of imagine what this looks like. So this is the cover.
Oh, I want you to describe.
Also incredible.
Describe the cover for people.
Okay, so the cover is really giving like old school video games. So it says like the title Vermis, but it's like Lost Dungeons and Forbidden Woods official guide. It looks like a game guide down to a T.
And even has very game-like colors, like it's yellow and like gangrene green.
It looks like, it has this image that looks like it's a little bit like off of an old TV, like very grainy.
This is a little, green. To me, this looks a little bit too gothic and dark for something that would be one of your record covers. Is that a reach?
That is absolutely true. This is too dark for something that I would, but you know, like.
But in the illustrated style,
and I do love me some like, definitely like some dark topics and theming. I'm not not everything in my world has to be.
I'm looking at your samurai sword.
Yeah, exactly.
Technically is ready to fight. It's not in its sheath.
Yeah, true. It's like not everything in my world has to be bright pink and candy colored.
But your hair right now is candy colored.
It's very candy colored. So I think there's I'm a big fan of contrast.
Absolutely. And who says that color and queerness can't be dangerous?
That is an absolute fact. It often has to be, unfortunately.
Fully. Okay, so speaking of that, so my transition from whether or not you read the manual before you play the game now transitions into a question about makeup.
Oh, well.
So when you first decided that you were going to start wearing makeup, did you read a manual first or did you just try it out?
So I started with lipstick. Okay. That was the first piece of makeup that I
Where did you get your first lipstick?
At the Rossmann.
Rossmann! So, I'm a DM so just girly,
like,
but...
Just like drugstore around the corner from me.
Okay. What color? Was it red?
So I got one... No, I got... Actually, no. One was... I got two. One was red, and one was like this like shiny pink.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were both super cute. And those, I remember putting them on and immediately, like, getting them onto my teeth because I, like, immediately, like, jumped in.
Okay.
So I didn't watch videos or anything first.
Okay.
Then I, like, wiped my teeth clean and, like, then I watched a video, still fucked it up because I have, like, super, super jittery hands.
Okay, fair enough.
And then I asked my partner at the time. Which then they kind of like gave me some tips on how to do it. And
Did they apply for you?
No, they didn't apply for me because I was like, I want to learn. And they were also like, well, you have to kind of learn it. Okay, you know what I mean? If you want to wear makeup, you have to do it properly.
Sounds very erotic. I'm just going to put it out there.
There was definitely like a very, very cute teacher student
I love it
connection in the moment because they also it was actually kind of interesting because they didn't really wear makeup anymore at that point because they get like rashes from it actually but to like because I only asked about lipstick but they were like well but then I'll teach you about like eyeliner and everything as well. So then they like put on full face of makeup. It was like the kind of vibe of like this. It's like this joke of like seeing a veteran load his rifle for the first time. You know what I mean? It's like her. I've never seen her properly wear makeup like this, like a full face of makeup before. And her just like within like 5 minutes, full face of makeup. That was perfect down to the T. And I was like, dear God.
I mean, it sounds like walking into an analog room and trying to make a track or something.
Yeah,
when someone's got the whole thing sequenced and they're like, okay, you can play the SH-101 for like a minute, but don't touch anything else.
Here, you can turn this knob.
Yeah. Here's the LFO. Turn it.
Exactly.
So that was your lipstick moment.
So it was cool because in the first moment, it was kind of terrifying because I was like, well, how the fuck am I supposed to do this ever? Like, that is so many steps, so complicated. I have really fucking shaky hands as well. Like, I'll never get there. But then I have a thing that's kind of a theme throughout my life. Whenever I feel like I reach a moment where I feel like, well, I just can't do this. Like, it's just, like, not possible for me. Something inside my brain kind of, like, opens this door and then it's like, well, now I kind of have to, you know?
Oh.
Now I definitely have to kind of get there at some point.
Okay.
And then, like, I will do fucking, I am hella stubborn. So, like, I will do everything to get good at this. So then I wore, yeah, what I would, yeah, maybe a bit self-deprecatingly called terrible makeup for half a year or something, you know?
We could also call it, one of my favorite new phrases is bad drag.
Yeah, bad drag. That's perfect, actually. But that is actually even more perfect because, like, you know, when you watch Drag Race, there's always that one episode where, like, the queens talk about their coming up, you know, and their first steps.
Absolutely.
And it often shows, like, pictures of them or, like, sometimes shows, like, pictures of them, like, in their first drag. And you're just like, oh, my God. Okay. Wow.
Well, but it's, so what I love about this term, that's, there's this TikTok of Meatball. Do you know this drag queen named Meatball?
Of course.
Okay, so Meatball has this viral number that they did where they come out and they do a song and then they hold up at the very end these like Bob Dylan-esque signs. And the last one says, protect bad drag. And it became such a like saying for people just because it was like, oh yes, there is this standard of beauty that now has extended itself to even people who aren't even like protected.
Yeah.
And maybe even this idea of commercialization of queerness and how like standards of beauty have now moved their way there. And like in the grand scheme of wearing makeup and especially wearing a makeup in the context of being an artist, like bad drag is actually beautiful makeup.
I prefer imperfection than perfection. My favorite drag queen I will always prefer Trixie Mattel over someone like Gottmik.
Right.
You know what
of
I mean?
Of course, yeah.
Which is because there's, of course, like Trixie Mattel is calculated imperfection, you know what I mean?
So
that's maybe like a bad example, but I think there's something to be said about the beauty of ugliness, even in a way, to be honest. Like
well, this to me is aesthetically such a great transition into talking about trance.
Yeah, let's do it.
And euphoria.
Yeah.
Because like you are and your crews and the people that are playing around with the aesthetics of trance are saying, let's break this down.
Yeah.
And play around with it and remix it. Yeah. Trance was such a rigid format for so long about taking you higher and perfect synths, you know, and perfecting the craft of the electronics that you hear out of the speakers and these long blends.
Do you want to hear something? And like this also like this feeling of like really like leaving your body, because it's like in a way it's something that comes, like it's kind of funny because my mom used to tell me about this like party series in Berlin that was called Trance Dance.
Nice.
And it was like,
where was it? Do you remember?
I mean, West Berlin.
Okay.
So it was still like while the wall was up.
Okay.
And it was like really about like kind of like dancing in a way that felt like you're like leaving your own body behind. So there was way more of a spiritual context to it as well. But yeah, I think so. And I think that spiritual context that it comes from is like something that really led to these like long and incredibly epic, sweeping, dreamlike breakdowns and blends, you know what I mean? But then, as things tend to sometimes do, I think that has kind of, that at some point kind of cannibalized itself in the 2000s, you know what I mean?
Well, in a way, the fun of what that was and its origins got sucked out because it's probably the first commercially viable form of dance music.
True, you're completely correct.
It's like, you know, it was like, now, like, there was a moment in time where Sasha and Digweed was a bad word.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, now, of course, we look back and we're like, absolutely not. You know, like, you know, they're iconic. But it's like there's this period also where that's why a lot of naysayers and boomers and people who are like, I was there then, like, were so incensed by the idea that trance was coming back.
Yeah.
But they couldn't hear it the way Narcisse is doing it.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't hear it the way in which Berlin was like reclaiming the original grit.
What I find incredibly interesting about this like new wave of, I struggle to even call it trance because I think it goes more broadly into like electronic music in general. Because like I saw an interview with Anthony Fantano once where they talked about trends. And he said, and somebody asked him, do you think this and this is going to do a, make a comeback? And then he said, I don't really believe in comebacks because I think there's not really trends anymore. Everybody is just consuming everything at the same time. And there's new things that, like everything that happens now happens between two things. I think that's so on point.
Oh, I love that.
And if you take this like new generation of artists that has kind of broken through at the same time that I'm like apparently lucky enough to consider myself as one of them, I think it's really interesting because none of us consciously took trends as an influencer. What we all did was we took the music that we kind of grew up with, which is in this city, techno, or like the music that was relevant, and we all kind of brought a sense of emotion to it.
Right.
But what happens when you bring emotion into, let's say, high-paced techno music, it's going to sound pretty fucking trancey, like pretty trancey. So, and I think it's interesting because now it's been a couple of years have passed.
For sure.
Since that. And you can see, it's almost like in an anime or something, you know what I mean? You can see all of these artists that broke through at the same time now having developed their own styles that are very far away
very
from
far.
What we started out with.
Yeah, Horse Girl, MCRT, and what you
Horse Girl,
are on like completely different islands.
Me, DJ Heartstring.
Yeah.
Marlon, we all make such different classes now. I completely like cut the rope to trance music almost and like have fully like jumped into the pool of like house music back and like embraced my roots and have added that to it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
DJ Heartstring has really like accentuated their like these melodies that come from like Jonas's Italo background, you know, these like really these like sweeping melodies and mixed some like UK house in there as well with these like chopped up vocals and stuff like that. Marlon has fully gone into like the hard house direction in very, very intensely. You know what I mean? MCRT completely like hip hop flavored nowadays.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Horse Girl
sure.
has like embraced Y2K more than any of us and is just making this like very, very social media friendly, I would say, but not like in a negative way at all, of just like this very like social media friendly, weird hyperpop music, you know? So it's all like all of us that started with these sounds that sound quite similar. Like you could definitely say like, that's why I say it's so anime, you know, because in a lot of these like anime that are like,
oh my God, I can't wait for this part.
Yeah,
this is my,
these,
I'm like,
these, like,
I can't wait,
fighting,
go for it.
Fighting anime or like anime that's more like for like usually aimed at young people, but I think their entire fan base is like adults or at least in large chunks. They always all or a lot of them are like centered around this like group of youngsters that then develop their own styles, often like even in a school. So like maybe we all like are from the same class in the same school, you know what I mean? But then we all developed our own crews, our own like fighting styles, if
for
you
sure.
will. So that's kind of, I find that to be so interesting.
I would say, because I'm a big fan of everyone that you mentioned, including yourself, that school was a school that like, you had to master humor.
Yep, facts.
You had to really know how to have a good time. Like having a good time was as important as your technical ability.
Yeah.
Like, because bringing fun, being young and bringing fun was a part of that school, you know? And I also feel like being European, regardless of the context of where you are from.
That's interesting, right?
Is that a part. Central factor, which is why I want to talk to you about Eurovision.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Oh, my God. Yes.
Because there are these nostalgic things that have existed throughout your childhood, my childhood. But one thing that I can see as a part of this little scene, especially how aesthetically it's like now shot into all these different subsections of what dance music exists now and tempo ranges and all that. But like, there are these weird little origin stories. Maybe, you know, Eurovision happened once a year, whether you liked it or not.
Oh, yeah.
And defined the use of synthesizers in these, like, for better or worse ways.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And there was a competition around a song. And it got more and more Eurotrance as the 2000s came.
Yep.
And it's like you could not ignore all of those elements and then see how the school, this anime school that you're talking about, couldn't have been slightly affected.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Absolutely, you know what I mean? It's also like, I mean, it had to have come from somewhere as well. You know what I mean? Like, we don't just out of the blue, like, get the idea, oh, yeah, let's maybe, like, yeah, let's just, like, make some like, emotional dance music. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, of course, we were so influenced by all of this music that we grew up with playing on the TV. You know what I mean? Because for a time, it was everywhere.
For sure.
Like, this specific music, this, like, 2000s, like, Eurovision-tinged, like, Eurodance music, it was, like, it played in every commercial that was on the TV. Anytime you turned on, like, MTV, it was on there next to, like, the pop hits. Anytime that you, like, even... I just talked about anime. Have you heard the anime opening songs from like the early 2000s? It's all Eurodance. I made a remix of that Sailor Moon opening song, that first one, because it's just a trance track.
Right. Like, right.
So yeah, it's like that made a huge impact, I think, at a time when we all didn't really think about what an impact that would kind of make, you know what I mean?
But I think that's where I think that was the unifying factor for what makes it so fun for European young kids.
Yeah.
Because they're like, I like fast music, I like techno.
Yeah.
But I also, this feels nostalgic for me. And nostalgia is happening sooner and sooner for people because of the internet.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, we're nostalgic about a trend 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, people phase through virality, and it's almost like they, like, aged out. And then they come back, and you're like, oh, that person from 2 years ago, where have they been?
I think that's why the whole Princess Superstar thing is fascinating to me.
Thank you for bringing that up, because...
That is incredible, right?
I am first wave Princess Superstar.
Really?
Super fan?
No way.
Oh, for sure. I'm an Electro Clash baby.
Oh, hell yeah.
My Peaches CD case is so crushed from the amount of times that my friends would sit on it in my Honda Accord, which we would skip. We would skip school, put on the Peaches CD, and go get Taco Bell.
That is so fucking legit.
So Princess Superstar, and like, damn to hell anyone that fucks with Princess Superstar. I understand that the context of her coming back in is like really confusing for people, but Princess Superstar is a G.
Dude, I'm about to blow your mind.
Okay, let's do it.
Do you want to hear something? I'm on a lineup with her in 3 weeks.
Is it in Ibiza?
No, it's in London.
Okay, but can you do one in Ibiza and then I'll come?
That would be insane, right?
That's so cool.
That's so cool, right? I really want to meet her because I'm like, I'm not first wave because unfortunately, like, I was big into Peaches as well. And I loved all of that music so much. But I think what happened was that actually was a wave that never fully spilled over here.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's that very New York, fully, very America.
Yeah, that never fully broke.
We got
Peaches.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like even when you would even go slightly deeper, that didn't really make it here as like a trend back then. But
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Princess Superstar. Love it.
I'm very, 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 very excited for that.
Okay, well speaking of gay icons.
Before we go there,
okay,
how do we get to Princess Superstar?
We were talking about Eurovision.
Oh, yeah, the trends, the nostalgia.
Nostalgia.
I find that so fascinating, the, like, nostalgia happening earlier and earlier. I had such an interesting example of that, like, a little bit ago, because I was playing this video game like half a year ago, and then I saw something online about like an alternative ending that you can unlock. And then I like booted it up again, and I had this weird moment where I felt as nostalgic for that thing that I consumed only like half a year ago, maybe, as I would have felt for something that I would have played in my like younger years. And I was like, what the hell is this? How's that? That's so weird. Like that's, I find that fascinating. It's so like, yeah, definitely.
Well, I think it requires a certain amount of experimentalism and yeah. also a certain amount of humor to play around with that. Because, you know, people are very serious about, you know, their craft and art and like how, like, for example, like the golden rule, don't play more than one song by one artist in a DJ set. You know, like that's, I remember growing up and being like, okay, gotta pick the one. And then it was like, but also you could play doubles of the same song, you know?
Well, but then you can also play an entire set of one artist.
Right. Yes. Or you can go even further and play an entire set of one song that just has other things coming in and out, you know?
Yeah.
But, as we get further and further away from all of these rigid rules about that, I can see how this like quick turnaround of nostalgia and then all of this humor of the way in which now when someone makes a really trash remix of something that goes gets really popular on TikTok, then comes right back to the club.
Yeah.
Like within 24 hours.
Yep.
And it's great.
Yeah.
I think it's cool.
Yeah, me too. I think like, I mean, it's also just, I love nostalgia so much. I mean, obviously, like knowing a little bit about me or like watching me even slightly on Instagram and what I'm into, that's like, no shit. No way. I would have never guessed. But like, I love nostalgia so much.
I want to read you something I found on the internet before you came in today.
Okay, let's go.
It says, interestingly, Capricorns are said to age backward. They become increasingly youthful, optimistic, and playful as they mature.
No fucking way. Where is that from?
It's from like an Elle magazine. Someone who just wrote about what it was like to work with Capricorns.
That is so on point.
And
I feel that so much. Like right? Also to a degree that you couldn't even know about.
Well, I want to say, I was like, okay, in your school, in your anime school that you were talking about earlier, you're not only the one that came out and started to go maybe towards a house route.
Yeah.
You also started to be the one to be most visibly queer.
Yeah.
And out.
Maybe next to a horse girl, I would say. But that's a
different... But horse girl's a horse.
That's the thing I was going to say. Like, then that opens a whole nother can of worms.
No, shout out to the future of like horse girls everywhere.
Yeah,
you know,
shout
freedom
out.
To be you.
Also shout out to the future of horses in general.
Yeah, fully. Fully. I guess what I mean is in terms of like you being vulnerable, your face being vulnerable.
Yeah.
To all of the potential good and bad things that come with being like, hey, I'm here and this is the authentic me.
Yeah.
And I read this Capricorn thing.
That's insane.
And I was like, I love being able to watch an artist.
Yeah.
Like to become younger. Especially DJs.
Oh, that hits me in my feels right now. Wow. Wow. I have to collect my thoughts for a second with you saying that. Yeah, I always think there's, I mean, in general, there's, I know the fascination very well of watching someone, be it a fictional character or someone real, and watching them evolve over time. No matter how, like, that is already quite fascinating, right? But then I often imagined this about what would be like for like fans of me to watch how I change and evolve and how I change and evolve, how my music changes and evolves as well. But like also me as a character, as a person, because like I am quite like open and public about what I feel like, what I do, what I like. I would say I'm a very lifelike artist, maybe.
And that is almost generationally demanded these days.
Yeah.
Like the success of an artist right now is someone who is available like that online.
And like but coming back to the aging backwards thing.
Yeah.
That is insane, because that's legitimately like, I always said like this sentence to people, that I feel like I age kind of asynchronously. So I feel like I've lived my 50s when I was 20.
So instead of Benjamin Button, are you Benjamin Banger?
Benjamin Britt.
They, them.
Yeah, yeah. Ben.
But yeah, I low key, like, I watched your, I think it was your Arte live DJ set.
Yeah.
And there was something like so crazy for me, because I watched, I don't know, there's this trend I feel like for artists that are becoming more vulnerable. And I equate that as younger, like younger at heart in these like, especially when it comes to DJ sets, and now how they're like set up to be big, you know? And that one also felt like it was like a moment, you know? You're this like colorful, bright.
We could make an entire podcast about that set by itself.
But like we are now, if you're a dance music fan, you're hungry for these video feeds of a set like that. It's almost becoming Eurovision for dance music, you know?
100%. I wanted to say that earlier, actually, like there's a lot of parallels to the DJ world. I feel like, but we can get into that later.
With that, and then reading the sentence, it was like, it was a click for me.
Yeah.
Of being like, the reason why I'm getting so much out of this is because you can see everyone around you feeding off of you getting younger in front of them.
I've always like described, I mean, okay, there's so many things to unpack. Jesus. So I always describe like the relation between a DJ and the crowd is like very like a symbiotic relationship, because they're like feeding off of you and your energy, but you're feeding off of theirs. You know what I mean? And if one of the two chains, like one of the two links of that chain isn't giving the other what it needs, then it like shrivels and dies. You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh.
But
yes, I do know what you mean.
Yeah. So, but there's also this thing of like, I mean, with the aging backwards, I think it's so interesting because there's so many moving parts to this. So I think these like moments, and like with nowadays, especially more of these big moments being needed and something that people actively look for, I think that is even a slight bit problematic, because what happens when more people are in demand of something, there's less of it. And I think a lot of people are currently trying to construct these big emotional moments when that is something that you cannot construct. That is something that has to be authentic. It has to come from a very real place, which is what happened in that set. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I was just really fucking overjoyed to be playing a DJ set because I thought the festival got canceled. You know what
really?
I mean? Yeah. Do you not know the story behind
this? No, I don't.
Yeah. So the festival got canceled due to storms and bad weather. I like 1 minute after I was supposed to play, it started like raining and lightning and shit like that. And then the entire festival grounds had to be evacuated. Yeah.
Wow.
And then 1.5 hours later, we got word that like the weather's pulling over, and then the sun came out, and then it was like, oh, by the way, you're starting that floor. And I was like, no, is it still being recorded? And they were like, oh yeah, for sure. And I was like, oh Jesus, that's going to be insane. And then it was.
It's such a cool set too. And, you know, to my credit, that is a very recent thing I watched, and it has nothing to do with trance. So even I want to, for my younger self in this interview, I want to make sure that everyone understands that.
True.
I see where your sound is going and love it. And I think, you know, in that set, it's like where a sound is peaking, and you can see as an artist is just like exploding with energy, excited about the way that you're communicating that sound.
Yeah. But I think what you said about like aging backwards, and like, because it's interesting, because usually when an artist grows up, I mean, that's unfortunately been an experience for a lot of artists that I've followed. The bigger they get, And the more requested they get, the less joyful they seem with the music that they make a lot of the time. But
facts.
Yeah, right? But then it's fascinating because then, not to fucking toot my own horn too much because I really don't want it. This isn't meant less as, ooh, I'm so cool. But more like as a, watching back my own evolution and seeing where I came from, the even when you compare the Boiler Room set we talked about earlier and the artist set that was recorded about a little bit over half a year later, I think like 8 months or something like that, there is more joy in my face than in the Boiler Room set.
I watched both.
And then when you go...
And I know exactly what you're talking about.
And then when you go back even further to my Hör set, the second one, you can see less joy. And then in the first Hör set, there's definitely a lot of fire in my face in that first Hör set.
Yeah.
But not even an inkling as much joy as in the artist set. So it's weird. Somehow, I don't know, something about doing this for a full-time job makes me enjoy it that much more, to be honest. Like, I just love DJing. Like, and I feel like I love it more now than I ever have.
Okay, so one thing we haven't gotten to, which is so near and dear to my heart, is Schöneberg. Because I actually live in Wilmersdorf.
No.
But
that's still quite
it's
a
very
ways
close.
Off.
It's what I call the retirement home for gays is Wilmersdorf.
Oh my God, that's so fucking funny because like then when you look at Nollendorfplatz, that is very much not the retirement home for gays.
No, it's not.
That is like
you
peak,
get pushed out.
Yeah, that is like peak gayness, and then when you're done, you move on to like the
No, my neighbors are all, we're all like kind of like over the hill, like in our 40s or 50s. And we're like, yeah, we can't really afford to live, you know, near Bruno's or near Tom's or whatever. But when I was reading your bio, I was like, oh, what?
Yep.
So.
Hell yeah, baby.
You also earlier described being in your mother's womb during Love Parade. Mm-hmm. But for listeners who don't live in Berlin or have never been to any of those events, like, that's the backyard of where you were living.
Hell yeah, it was.
So explain to people, like, the musical context, not just the queer context, but the musical context of being growing up in that neighborhood.
Of growing up in Schöneberg?
Yeah.
I mean... It's interesting, right? Because I definitely, like, I picked up a lot of music from Kreuzberg because that's where I, like, learned all of the instruments that I played, basically.
Okay, got
it. But, like, so Schöneberg, it has this, unfortunately, by the time that I was born, a lot of the, like, deep musical heritage of Schöneberg, or not by the time I was born, that's not true, actually, but by the time I was conscious enough as a person
fair enough.
Actively consume it. So let's say my teens, which would have been at like 2010 or something like that, a lot of that cultural heritage had unfortunately been lost.
Were there record stores still?
There
in
were
the area?
Still
oh my God,
some
please
record
tell
stores.
Me which ones you remember because there aren't anymore.
No, they all closed down. So there used to be an amazing, amazing record store that I fucking don't know the name anymore.
But where was it?
Nollendorfplatz.
In the Platz.
Right by it. So it was like when you go into Motzstraße and it was like, I think the second store on the left was a record store.
Ugh.
And it was a legendary one.
I bet.
I think I even picked up my first like vinyl record that I ever bought there.
Perfect.
To be honest. And I remember it was a punk record.
Nice.
So that one was around. There was also Mr. Dead and Mrs. Free.
Okay.
The guy who did that was actually like a friend of my dad, funnily enough.
Maze.
Old friend, which was cool. What else? There was so many, like, there was still definitely, like, a few, like, cultural institutions, I would say, around. But they weren't, like, the same as during that time. Do you know about the legacy of the Metropol?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, perfect. Nice.
I was gonna say, preaching to the choir. It must have been so bizarre to be walking around your neighborhood and then every once in a while Metropole is exploding with like queer energy or rock and roll energy.
That is what I mean. Like, unfortunately, that was gone by
the time
that I was alive to witness it. Yeah.
But they still do the special events there, right?
But special events, but it's nothing. I mean, like, so my mom's in her 60s.
Okay.
And my mom tells stories about this place that are incredible. Where I'm always like, oh man, I would have loved to witness that.
Yeah, it
sounded like the Berlin version of something like Studio 54.
Yeah, maybe bigger.
Yeah, I think like talking about Schöneberg, you could like do an entire documentary. You could make like a series of these podcasts about Metropol alone. Because it was apparently just this legendary.
I mean, just from the outside, like I'll describe it a little bit. You can too.
It's a temple.
It's a temple, but it also looks like it could be in Batman's Gothic.
Yeah, 100% true. Oh my God.
It is a Gotham City building.
100%.
And then it's right across the street from one of the most iconic U-Bahn stops.
Yep.
That also has like a fantastic look to it. So it's not like nightclubs that you associate with Germany, which are either completely hidden in graffiti or look like some bombed out war building. This is like,
like
fantasy.
A bunker or something. Yeah. Do you know about the history of the Disco Temple? This was a German, like a Berlin, I think even like, no, not a Berlin thing, but definitely like a German thing. The Disco Temples were a thing that opened around like the 80s.
Okay.
And they were these like huge discotheques that like massive, like Metropol, that were these amazing places that people would flood to for a time.
Nice.
And they must have been incredible. I would have loved to witness it. This goes kind of back to like the little anime school of DJs, but like growing up in that era of Berlin, because I'm like born and raised, and it's like, I mean, obviously, as you know, but like growing up in that time of Berlin and like being into electronic music was weird because it felt like you were like this archaeologist of a greater time that has been, that you can only find relics of still. But you're like, no, but I still want to do this. But it's like, well, here's this thing that was fantastic.
Right.
It's not around anymore.
Right.
But yeah, it was great. And you're like, well, shit. Like, so you're like, you're finding all of these bits and pieces of things that were these like larger than life, incredible things. And it was just up to you to piece together what they may have been like.
So true, because they don't really say, you know, like I've been walking past the old Trezor for 15 years and I had no idea where it was.
Yeah, perfect example. The old of like going to Trezor and then being like, oh man, I'm having so much fun here because I don't know if you know this, but I had like my first official public DJ gig at Trezor. At the new one.
Oh, at the new one. Yeah. Okay, cool.
So, which is now actually like around longer than the old one ever was.
Oh, right.
And even this extends to even places like Berghain, what I talked about. Because it was like, you would go to Berghain and you would be like, oh my God, this club is incredible. What an amazing place. This truly is the magnum opus of Berlin club music. And then it took like one person to come up to you and be like, oh yeah, but it's not what it used to be. And you're like, well, God fucking damn it, what is how it used to be then? You know what I mean? And it's like, so it's kind of like, I think maybe that's why so many of us were drawn to like these older club music sounds, because we were like, but then how do we make it that way again?
Right. Oh yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I think that's why, that's definitely why I'm so fucking fascinated with digging through old records.
Well, I have to say, I would love it if you could like distill a party that you guys have thrown with the music that you're playing and distilled it into a scent and sprayed it in front of a raver from the 90s.
Yeah.
Would they smell
that
you guys are trying to recreate, you know? And I think they would. I think that's what's, because if you look at photos from Love Parade and if you hear about these venues, they were full of antics and people getting lots of trouble and like, rules were being broken. There wasn't much seriousness about it.
No, I think what I like, that's what I love about it. I think that occasionally you can like go to YouTube and like see in some of the comments that it will be like, or I saw this on like some sets of me, that it will be like some old heads being like, holy shit, this looks exactly like a party from when I was young. And I'm always like, yes! Fuck yes!
Nice. Yeah. Hell yeah.
But so that's like, I think that's, I mean, that's not the point of what I make, you know, I want to do my own thing. But
oh
like,
yeah, let's talk about making.
I'm definitely like, that's why I'm definitely like obsessed with these old anthems as well, you know,
right.
I'm obsessed with these anthems that have been forgotten by time because they are just, they're built different sometimes, you know what I mean? There's a certain magic to it.
Yeah, of course.
And it feels like, yeah, maybe like, that's why I love to play them as well, because it feels like I'm giving this moment from the past that I wasn't around time to shine again. And now I can witness it for myself, you know? I think
Absolutely.
There's so much power in that.
There is, and there's a lot of power in world building.
Yeah.
And I am so excited about a hopeful future LP from you, because I feel like the long player, the full video game,
have you,
manual or not.
Yeah. Have you pieced this together by yourself?
No. I assume it's got to be coming.
Yeah, I'm working on it. Yeah.
Sick.
Like I'm
sick.
Yeah, I'm working
good.
On it.
Good. It's time.
That's a fact, yeah.
All right, good.
It's, I would say, maybe like halfway finished.
Nice. Wow. So what do they call it? They call it the album cycle.
Yeah.
I just heard this term the other day. I mean, I've heard it around.
I'm so impressed that you would like naturally bring this up. I haven't talked about this to a lot of people. I think maybe like 4 or 5 people overall.
See, I mean, if you look at your output, you know, as someone who's put out a lot of music and like, I like licked my finger right before you came in.
Yeah. And you could see it slow down a little bit, I guess, eh? The output. And you were like,
it's like often when there's like some high profile remixes,
God, you know,
you're like buying yourself some time.
You are good. Wow.
No, I didn't know, but I just wanted one because your approach to dance music is so refreshing. And I, as a queer person, I am desperate for these long players from other queer electronic musicians who like to have fun, who have like the right kind of respect and future leanings, you know? And so I just know that whatever world you build, that'll be like 10 to 12 tracks is going to be
there's
really,
a huge
really great.
Queer context of it so far, actually, because it's very much like, I think like, I would say like the central theme of what I have so far, like, and I think that's going to progress. It's very much like a catharsis, I think, is definitely like the theme.
Will there be furries?
It's so funny that you say that, because I was thinking about like, not furries, but what do they call it when it's like insects? Because there's a thing for that as well.
Is there?
Yeah.
Is that newer?
So there's scalies, that's when it's reptiles.
Girl, I am so behind. Yeah. Scalies.
And there's something about insects.
I had scabies once. Yeah. It's not the same thing, right?
Not,
okay, scalies.
Not, luckily.
Damn, this sounds expensive.
And there's something, because I was thinking about it, like about a bit like an insect, you know, because there's about like butterflies coming out of their
love.
Shell.
Butterflies are so in
and
right
I think
now,
that's
too.
Because that's like the most cathartic thing that nature has to offer, you know, the progression from the caterpillar into a butterfly. So I was thinking about it in that context quite a bit.
Well,
but that's it's so funny that you would like bring up furries of all things.
I mean, my
when
brain
I was already thinking about it like an anthropomorphic animal context.
Well, I was thinking like queer long player 2024 furries.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, and not ironic. See, we're past the irony phase of furries.
No,
this is not
like,
a bronies thing.
No, this is not.
We're talking
like,
about the emancipation of furry sex-driven outfits.
Yeah, imagine. I was going to say, imagine the fly, but slay.
I think we can
it's
end.
It's not the fly, but
I
slay.
Think that, but is there anything else that could be said that's better than that?
This has taken such a turn in the last 20
in the
minutes.
Best, in the best way. So we have secrets have been unfolded.
Yeah.
We've really gotten to know all aspects.
Yeah.
And just, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you in the studio
Same
today.
Same here. Thank you. This was wonderful.
And looking forward to what's next.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be a ride, as it always is.
Thank you so much for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Really.
So I guess that's it for this Electronic Beats conversation, but there will be more, promise. This Electronic Beats conversation was produced by Telecom Electronic Beats and ACB Stories.